We are the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Well, let's just say the 6 o'clock news will never be the same again. The days of Walter Cronkite and three network channels has long passed. Well, journalism has morphed into news, opinion, and ideological rants, all passed off as unbiased, honest news. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. So your search continues for the Out Loud truth. I get it. Well, here it won't be just the news. It'll be how we discuss the news. A drive time show you can count on weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We call it Nozzle. World news, political talk, stories that impact your health. Honor our heroes, stories that'll inspire you. What you'll hear next is the heartbeat of the people. The hottest topics, the news stories that trend. It's time, friends, for a new stream of consciousness. It's Nozzle. I was born in Iran. She was living in the San Diego area. And, the family tried to warn the officials. The officials spoke to the woman before she went into YouTube and started to shut things up. This story could have been a lot worse, very clearly. Could have been a hell of a lot worse, really. But what's happened is a lot of these companies like YouTube, and there are others as well, Facebook, Google, many of these technology companies, what's happening is they're changing the rules, Jim. They're changing the rules. They're changing the way they initially structured these programs. They're all having their troubles right now, actually, if you look at the technology world right now. And so YouTube is no different. They've changed the way you monetize these videos. Well, there are a lot of people who got involved in YouTube as a career to make money. Now, this lady was doing wacky videos online. She was doing, animal videos and dancing around and doing some really crazy, crazy stuff. I'm wondering if she was on, again, psychotropic drugs of some sort. But in any event, which is a lot of these people are on something when they get these guns and they go out and do these kinds of things. But clearly, this lady is, she decides she drives all the way up in the state and she goes right into the YouTube and she shoots a few people. She kills herself. Now, no one else has died up to this point. I think one was in critical condition at all. What do you make of this story, Dr. Mitchell, and the fact that, again, this is another lunatic, I don't know, we don't know what she was on or not on, but somebody who got upset, she had a grievance with the company, and we see a lot of that, don't we?
Well, you see some of it. It's unusual for it to be a woman.
Exactly.
Especially like that. I mean, usually if it's a woman, they strike out at the company in other ways. It's unusual for a woman to take a handgun and go someplace and shoot the place up, but... You know, when I first heard about it, I figured she was disgruntled about something. And like often happens in these situations, the first few stories that come out are not going to be accurate. And so opinions really need to be modified as additional information comes out. So she strikes me as a person who had sort of set her hopes on becoming famous and making a living off of the Internet using YouTube. I guess getting money from ads and that sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, they were paying them. Yeah, they were monetized.
Right, and then when they changed the way it was monetized, she lost that and blamed YouTube as if it were a personal affront on her rather than a business decision that they made, and went up there and shot the place up.
One of her complaints was not just the monetization, but it was the part that her videos, she was making good money initially, but then they sort of to turn the faucet down. So what they do is then she wasn't getting as many views. So they considered some of her stuff, probably radical. I don't know. Anyways, they all have policies. They have policies. You know, when you join one of these groups, Jim, you know, you get into one of these things, you know how you look at it like a 20-page thing and you say yes before you go online, you know, right?
Absolutely.
They
almost
all have
no one
that.
Reads those.
Who the hell reads it? I have never read one. You never read one. I don't know of anybody that's read one. So they have all their attorneys get together in a room. They come out with a 20-page thing. You quickly scroll through it. You hit yes, or you get online. It's the same thing with the email programs and Gmail and stuff that – but the bigger story here to me is we're giving away our privacy. All the stuff that's free email, free social media, free video stuff, anything that's free – I'm telling you now, is coming at a price. That's the lesson that I think people are going to find in the New World Order, Dr. Mitchell. I think it's exactly that all the stuff that they're giving to you free, you have to just realize and do the math yourself. Somehow or another, these companies have to make money. I mean, they're going to make money by selling your stuff, right? Your
advertising. Right, and that's, I've seen a number of people make the point that for YouTube and for Facebook and for Instagram, you are the product that they sell to the data collectors. Yeah. So it isn't that they're giving you something for free. It is that you are exchanging your private information in exchange for being able to use their services for what to you appears to be free, but they're making money by selling your information.
That's exactly it. So everybody needs to know with all of these, you just said it very well, you're the product. Just everybody keep that in your mind, that if you're okay with being the product, so if it's free, you're the product. Just remember that's the denominator you need to use when you go on all of these sites. And all of these things that say free, there's a price to pay because, again, they're going to take that data and they're going to sell it. I mean, Facebook is under a lot of scrutiny right now because of exactly that model. All this stuff free, and then Cambridge Analytica got all this data, and who knows what they're doing with it. You know, we're in a new world right now. We're in a cyber world that is changing the rules of engagement as we speak. Just here late today, as we've come on with this broadcast, in fact, here, Jim, I'll tell you another story right now that's out. It's hot. Sears and Delta Airlines, if you've flown on Delta or you've shopped at Sears, of course, a lot of people are not shopping at Sears these days, but that's a whole other story for another day. But if it's Sears or Delta, so all of their, a lot of their data, their customer data, has been exposed in a cyber attack. There's not probably a day that goes by anymore where there isn't some major story with cyber. So this means your private information with these people are now probably in the hands of evil doers. So what's going to happen ahead with all this cyber stuff now, I think, is what's on my mind, Dr. Mitchell. Where are we going? Because everything is on digital. Everything is in the cyber world. I mean, you can't do anything today without being somehow connected to the digital world. We're given all this information, and even companies like this, your flight information, your credit card information, data that's put in there, so on and so forth. I mean, your birth date, your security number in cases, and everything is being compromised. I think it's going to be a big problem ahead. It's going to have to be some new rules of engagement or some regulations, I think, or I think consumers are going to get a bit timid with sharing this information, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, they're going to get more. I mean, I can remember when I was first in the Air Force in the 70s, you were required to put your Social Security number and your address and your phone number on your checks when you cashed them, cashed a check or paid for anything at the stores on base. You know, if you went to the grocery store or the hardware store or whatever happened to be on
base. And you thought nothing of doing that either.
Absolutely nothing of doing that. And in fact, all your reports, everything you did had your Social Security number on it. And no one really thought very much about compromising it. And of course, that has evolved away from doing that now. And undoubtedly, it's going to evolve again. And that what you have to hope, and we don't know because they probably aren't telling us, is that for those companies like Delta or Sears or whoever is being compromised, hopefully they keep your credit card information behind a more secure set of firewalls than they do just your name and address, right? You would hope that they would, that it wouldn't be as easy as just hacking into one place into their systems, but we don't know. And my guess will be that the government, the federal government, and I'm a small government person, will probably have to look at these compromises and come up with some kind of a regulation that requires that they take better care of people's personal information.
Yeah, I think there's going to have to be something, definitely regulations and this sort of thing, because you're right. It's funny you mentioned the security number, and I remember that. You thought nothing of the Social Security number. Today, you know, even when somebody asks for it, I don't give it. I'm most uncomfortable with giving that information out to anybody, even in places where they have to have it. You know, Jim, even those places, I sort of want to know, or sometimes they'll ask for it. You know, I remember being at a doctor's office a couple of months back, and they asked for exactly that, the Social Security number. And the lady said, well, we have to have that. I said, well, I'm not giving it to you. She said, well, we have to have that on there. So you know what? I said, well, I'll give you the last four digits. That's all you're getting. She said, okay, that'll have to do. I said, well, that'll have to do because you're not getting the whole thing.
So, there you go.
So I gave her the last four digits, and that's it. But I'm, you know, I'm not comfortable with it.
Yeah, and people have become less comfortable with it. I mean, it used to be nothing to, you know, give out account information and that sort of stuff. And again, it's going to get more as the internet becomes more ubiquitous, and it already is. Right. You know, I pay for most of my stuff with an American Express card on my phone, and it's just going to get easier and easier and easier for people who are savvy to be able to get to your information. And so there's this almost this arms race with respect to security for personal information.
Yeah, and we're only at the start of that. The precipice is, we're headed down some pretty dangerous roads, I think, when it comes to this information. And you know, the problem in a simple doctor's office where you never thought before there'd be any problem with giving them a security number or something like that, here's the way I look at it. That information that's on a piece of paper or something that is written, that gets into a file cabinet. That information now is exposed to anybody who goes into that cabinet. The next thing is they have a disgruntled employee or something happens there internally. Or, again, somebody breaks in and starts stealing files. You know, you can't control that. You have no control over that information. So I think the lesson today and the takeaway from all of this is guard your information. I mean, your Social Security numbers, your birth date, any of that stuff. You got to guard it, and you got to keep it away from these things. So I wouldn't give it to anybody, including the doctor's office or anybody else. I mean, again, if anything, you give them the last four digits. If it's an identifier kind of a thing, you know, like they use it to identify. Now, if they're using it to track you financially, that's another story. You're not going to get away with that because you're not going to get the same information with four digits as you would with an entire Social Security number. But anyways, it is interesting how this whole thing, but again, I'm just seeing this afternoon, Sears and Delta Airlines. Every day we're seeing more and more of these companies. I'm becoming very gun-shy, if you will, as a lot of you out there are doing now, with putting our information forward. Even on these digital sites where we don't think anything about putting this information out there. What's happening right now, they are all being compromised. At one time or another, they're going to be compromised. And again, the cyber world is it's fluid. It's very vulnerable, and everybody's hacking. I think that's going to be the new world order. I think the wars are going to be fought in the cyber world just ahead. I mean, that's where we're headed right now. There's no question on my mind that's where we're headed. So another very interesting story that I want to talk to Dr. Mitchell about today that I find very interesting is the Department of Homeland Security. Well, they come out and say they're seeing some unusual activity in Washington, D.C., and they're not talking about like Congress all of a sudden, you know, is starting to legislate like we hire them and pay them for, right? That's not the kind of unusual activity we're talking about here. But it is activity that they're saying there's some rogue surveillance devices that are hijacking cell phones. They're listening to calls. They're reading text even. And this is kind of a very unusual story that I think is really an eye-opener to me. And I wonder how many other cities these things are in. Well, Homeland Security comes out and they say, and I'll tell you a little more on this story in just a little bit here on the program today, but they come out and they say, well, we need some more funding. We can't really track these down. We don't know where they're coming from or who has them here. But to actually track them down is going to require more funding. So I guess we'll have to see how they handle that, but they're looking for more money to be able to do their job. Very interesting. We'll touch on that, I got to tell you, man. Also, Vladimir Putin meets with Iran and Turkey in Ankara, and this is, they discuss Syria. This is kind of it's being called a new powerful alliance. Well, it caught my attention, because anytime you're talking about a powerful new alliance, and you're talking about people like Russia, Iran, and Turkey, well, my antenna goes up. I want to know what they're talking about and what's happening here. And that's another very interesting story we'll follow here with you this afternoon on Nozzle. John Kelly tells Scott Pruitt the scandals need to stop. Says the scandals need to stop. He's on the hot seat right now, Scott Pruitt, and he's the EPA director. And I think his days are numbered now. He's had some troubles with travel. He's had some other troubles with a lobbyist group, kind of a quid pro quo here, if you will. A lot of that goes on in Washington. It's not really unusual, Dr. Mitchell. I can tell you that much. And Rex Tillerson, well, he may be leaving or almost gone if he's still hanging on there. He's supposed to be gone, but I think it took him a while to clear his desk out. He's under scrutiny as well. His office for spending $12 million for some $300 an hour hiring all of these people to redesign the State Department, if you will. Really fascinating. Well, Dr. Jim Mitchell is here with us today on Nozzle, and I'm going to ask Dr. Mitchell to take a few seconds and tell folks just a little bit about yourself, please.
I have a PhD in clinical psychology from the University of South Florida. I started my adult career really as a bomb disposal specialist, an EOD guy. Got interested in how bad guys think, went off, got a PhD in psychology, came back in. Was in Air Force Special Operations for years, interested in counterterrorism. Worked with the CIA after I got out of the military as a contractor, helped them develop the enhanced interrogation program. Personally interrogated about 16 of the most senior terrorists that were involved in 9/11 and supporting Al-Qaeda immediately after the 9/11 attacks, and worked for them until 2009 when President Barack Obama dissolved the program and essentially fired us. So that's pretty much my background.
Yeah, well, it's a good background. It's good to have Dr. James Mitchell here today. More Nozzle in just a moment.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
The Homeland Security, they're seeing this activity up there. It's being reported now, but yet they don't really know where it's coming from or what's happening. So what's happening is this. These devices, they're called IMSI catchers, or they're also referred to as stingrays, okay? All right, stingrays. So, but officially IMSI catchers. And what they do, they're the size of just a small little suitcase, so they're not big at all, but they kind of trick all of these phones into thinking they are a cell tower. And what happens is they're catching all of the cell phones and the text even, and all this data is going into these units here. A pretty interesting way. And the other thing I know about these, Dr. Mitchell, is this. The other very interesting thing is that these are only legal. Of course, you know, we know what that means, but it doesn't mean that criminals, again, abide by laws. But they're legal only to be sold as public safety and to law enforcement officials in the public safety arena. So clearly, these are, you know, very high-level devices, clearly, and they use them, I guess the officials do, in various ways. But these are small, and now they've surfaced throughout the D.C. area, and they don't know more about that. What do you make of this story?
Well, my read on the story is that there's more information to come, because when they give an answer like that, if the federal government was concerned about counterintelligence and these rogue catchers showed up online, you can bet they would run those to ground. And the odds are pretty good that there is some way of identifying where that data is going and how that data is being collected. So my guess is we're just not getting the whole story. And you don't know when a federal agency says, well, we need to look more into this, whether what they're trying to say is, we have some sense of who's doing this and we don't want to tell you too much so that they run and hide, or we don't want to tell you who's actually doing it. They're doing it for your own good. But it does point out a problem, I think, that Americans have to get used to, and that is you cannot depend on our government to protect you and not have them surveil you. Right. So if what you're thinking is going to happen is that two terrorists are going to be driving down the road in Washington, D.C., text messaging each other about the bomb they're going to set off in the Capitol building, and we're going to somehow collect that data, there has to be something that collects that data. Now, whether those catchers that you're referring to are part of a system like that, or they're, you know, from the Washington Police Department, or there's some rogue thing that the FBI has, or the Russians are put in place, or who knows, you know, who knows. My point is that you can't have it both ways. You can't have it so that our government immediately knows what's on everybody's Facebook page so that they can run out and stop them if they want to do something crazy because they either lack the character to do the correct thing, have no sense of morality, or are somehow mentally ill, and not have them have that information about you as well.
Well, that is really well said, Dr. Mitchell, I have to tell you, because it's either you bring up some very interesting points in my mind, and one of them is we either got to get used to this and get more comfortable with it, you're saying, with this whole privacy, many people would call the Orwellian factor, the privacy violation. And you're very right. It's kind of the cake and eat it too syndrome because, you know, we're the first ones to give them hell when they don't catch the cat, that the guy that's going in to blow something up or do something nefarious. Well, why didn't you catch him? And we do that all the time. The media will jump on them immediately. That happened in the case of Parkland. Of course, that's a whole different story because there were a lot of things.
Well, in the case
right
of the
there.
YouTube shooter as well, not to overtalk you, but in the case of the YouTube shooter, you know, I've been a psychologist licensed, and I've dealt with people who are homicidal and suicidal. And when you call the sheriff's office and say, I have this person who is homicidal or suicidal, I believe that's the case, they will come out and then they will question that person. And that person has to say and do certain things or they don't have the right to detain them, even 24 hours. And so to be angry at the police department in the case of the YouTube shooter because they didn't snatch her up when she was in the parking lot, I think it's to be naive about what our freedoms as individuals are. Because up until the point that she breaks the law, she has the same freedoms that we have.
Yeah.
You know, the other piece of this thing, I know I've switched over to talking about this YouTube shooting, but as long as I'm on that particular rant, let me finish it. You know, the Americans with Disability Act really keeps people from, you know, collecting files and sharing information and discriminating against people who have various mental illnesses. So it's very difficult for a city, for example, to tag people who they think might be at risk for acting out if that person hasn't done anything that's blatantly illegal because there are laws that prevent that. And if we're going to put together a list of people who are potentially dangerous, then no one in your audience should be surprised if they find out their name is on that list as well, because they're going to have many, many, many more people on the list than who are actually dangerous, because they have to, you know, they have to monitor. It's not appropriate for a person like me with 20/20 hindsight to look back at that and say, well, you know, we should have been able to see that coming, because for every one person who acts that way and then goes out and shoots up a place, there are 100 or 200 or 300 who act the very same way, blow off steam and stay home. So it's difficult. It's a difficult task. I'm not saying we shouldn't do a better job. Absolutely, we should do a better job. And I'm not saying that the people at the YouTube are at fault for this, because they really aren't at fault. This person had a grievance that was probably driven by some form of mental illness or personality disorder, and she acted out in a way, but she knew what to say to the police to avoid being detained.
Exactly. Well, the other problem with that is, how do we reconcile what you just said with the fact that trust in government is at an all-time low? People simply don't trust the feds anymore. They see all of the news programs, all of the lies, the deceit. It's an everyday program. It's a 24/7 news cycle. And there's trust is at an all-time low. So you see, the problem is, how do we connect those two? You can't really reconcile that, can you? I mean, if we're going to trust the government, and we really don't trust the government, do you see where the problem is?
I do. Part of it, though, is getting used to it. I know that sounds like a strange thing to say, but anybody that's been to the UK recently knows that they have surveillance cameras everywhere. People don't even pay attention to those cameras anymore. And one of the ways they run crimes to ground is by following the criminal activity on those closed circuit cameras. And that's really the ultimate Big Brother, if you know what I mean.
It is Big Brother, but that's what they're doing in New York City. New York City, you can't move because they're such a threat and such a mecca and icon for these criminal people. They're a magnet for that kind of a thing. There are cameras everywhere. You can't move in New York City without being recorded. That's what you're talking about.
It is what I'm talking about. And it's going to be the case that you can't make a phone call without your at least the metadata being collected, and you're not going to be able to send an email. And you know that's the case because, you know, you saw back to Facebook,
right.
You saw that what Facebook has been doing is scanning everybody's JPEGs and emails and those sorts of things,
right.
And collecting that data. They said they weren't, but they were.
They are. And of course, it depends who you're talking to. Again, keep in mind now, the FISA Act is if you're talking to somebody overseas, you're automatically recorded. You're automatically put in the pool. Now, I talk to people overseas every day, multiple times a day. I talk to people worldwide every day. And so my calls are all being gathered into this bucket. In fact, I'm sure, Dr. Mitchell, they have a whole room out in the Utah desert that's called Out Loud, I would imagine. And I'm sure I'm on steroids out there. Can you imagine the kind of things I'm talking about on a daily basis when it comes, even the conversations we're having in this one conversation here on Nozzle Take It, can you imagine the buzzwords that we're saying? They're looking for buzzwords, you see. They're like the metadata, again, that you mentioned. They're looking for buzzwords. Are you saying this? Are you saying that? Are you saying terrorism? And then a little bit later, do you say the word Trump? And then do you say the other word YouTube? And do you say kill? And, well, hell yeah. I mean, I do that on a regular basis over breakfast in the morning. What's your point? But, I mean, so what does that mean? That means we're being surveilled. That means they know who I am, yeah? They know who you are too, don't they?
Well, I know they know who I am, but the question of whether they know who you are or not really depends on whether you get past the algorithms to a human being. And I suspect they probably have pretty good algorithms. I don't have I always assume when I send an email or a text message or a JPEG that more than whoever I intend it to go to is going to be reading it. Just like I assume when I travel overseas, I don't have privacy in my hotel room.
That's right. That's right. It's a good assumption actually to have. And quite frankly, you probably also know within yourself that you're not putting the sort of statements and things in there that are going to incriminate yourself. You got to be careful what you're writing. Even if you think it's a joke can come back to not be a joke, huh? You think about that, you know.
Yes.
I mean, they track you down and see your, you know, some people just make some real weird jokes. They do that. I mean, out there.
Especially if you're traveling in a foreign country where the kinds of jokes you might make would be interpreted as being insulting to some leader who it's a crime to insult in that particular country.
Yeah, I think that's a real problem, I believe, and that's going to be more and more. These are things, I like the way you put it out there, where, you know, you said it in the most simplest terms that a lot of people are not saying these days, and you made me think. You actually made, you know, here I am a small government guy, I don't trust them either, you know, I get it, but, you know, but you made me think a couple of times, and you said, well, you kind of can't have it both ways, Malcolm, so you either want the privacy and security, or do you want to be protected, or do you want them walking down the street and blow your ass up, or do you want to, you know, do you want to have some, well, okay, you're right, Doc, so at that point, I think we all have to kind of pay attention. But then somebody like Rand Paul would say, well, but the FISA Act is really just for the international bad cats. He, you know, sometimes when he's talking, and others like him, in more the libertarian mode, it's like, I almost get the feeling or the sense that they think, like, domestically there are no bad cats, or they're more limited to be bad cats or something, because, you know, they're not supposed to be tracked if you're an American citizen through FISA, and then otherwise you have a lot more liberties if you're an American citizen. But yet, a lot of these citizens, like even this one that just went into YouTube, I mean, there's a lot of insane people within the mix of us today. Do you see where I'm at?
Wouldn't it be the case that if there is a terrorist in the Middle East emailing or texting or Instagramming with a person here in the United States, that we should be able to see who it is that they're talking to? You know, if Zawahiri, the guy who's in charge of Al-Qaeda now, wants to engage me in a Snapchat, I think it's perfectly reasonable that the government will wonder, what are these guys chatting about?
Right.
What are these guys talking about? Because he's a pretty serious terrorist. And I don't think that I should be given some sort of carte blanche protection. And in the case where there are these communications that take place in short term, if terrorists or people who are suspected of terrorism are having some sort of a digital communication with somebody in the United States, and that's covered by FISA, it makes entire sense to me. And I don't know how the law changed. It sunsetted in December, and they had to renew it. But there was a movement, and Rand Paul was one of them, who a group of people who wanted to not be able to follow who they were communicating with in the United States.
Right.
And I hope that they didn't follow his suggestion. I hope that what happens is if a bad guy is emailing or texting or phone calls or whatever to somebody in the United States, at least a machine, hopefully a human being, will see who is it, this person that that this terrorist is talking to, or this potential terrorist, or this dangerous person, and what are they talking about? Because it seems crazy to me to then think you have to set up a separate warrant and take it to the judge, and then the warrant focuses on a single phone or a single computer or a single whatever, instead of being able to, regardless of which means of communication they're using, be able to track the person and not necessarily the device.
Yeah, I mean, I think when they cross the line that way, and they, like you say, I think all bets are off. You've got to track all this information, whether it's domestically or internationally. I mean, you know, you can't be, I agree with you, you can't be talking to people over there without having that tracked. And I've subscribed to that as well. It's a good philosophy just to subscribe to the fact that your emails are being read, your texts are being read, and your phone calls are probably being listened to.
It's not just that. The information that's being gained from that, even if they strip your identity out of it,
right,
meaning they can't come directly to you, that information is being sold. It's being sold because you are the product.
On these other social media companies and stuff
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I thought you were meaning for a moment the NSA was selling this stuff. I was like, come on, Jim.
You got
a news story you want to tell me about today? Go ahead.
About that. I don't think they would do that. It would be so incompetent if the government was doing it that we would have known the same thing. And I personally would rather that NSA be monitoring my phone calls and emails and stuff than YouTube or Google or, you know.
Well, and that's not happening. Back to your point right now, and I'm going to tell you right now, Jim, that when it comes to Google, I'll tell everybody, Google, Facebook, Twitter, Amazon, all of these companies, YouTube, they know more about you, and they know more about your life and what you're doing. And the data they have is far more serious than what the NSA has.
Exactly. Because NSA collects really metadata.
Right. Well, and everybody's signing up for this stuff because it's all free. And these companies were pretty ingenious to do this, actually, because that's how, you know, Facebook became the multi-billion-dollar gazillion success that they are. And, of course, Zuckerberg these days is apologizing about every day or every other day for the latest scandal or two that's happening here. That's a constant stream of apologies now. I mean, it's just coming fast. In fact, he's going to testify to Congress next week is what he's going to do about all this stuff with Cambridge Analytica and stuff. And they suspect, and by the way, I want to remind everybody, let me tell everybody right now, April 9th, which is Monday, I'll just rev you up now. If you're a Facebook person, and I am not, so I don't need to worry about this, but if you're on Facebook, they suspect the hashtag delete Facebook will be trending again big time, because that day, their chief technology officer of Facebook will put a link on your pages that will tell you if you were embroiled in that Cambridge Analytica scandal. So if they have your data and what have you that Facebook lied about, remember all of that here? Yeah. Then they suspect that that's going to reignite the movement for the hashtag delete Facebook, because they're going to now tell you. And that's 87 million people, by the way, Jim. It was 50, they thought, but it's 87 million now. Chances are some of the people we know are embroiled in that thing. I mean, 87 million people is a few people, you know. So, and then the other thing is they just came out with, Bloomberg reported here this morning, is that Facebook's scanning all your photos, all your private messaging. You know, on those social media sites, Jim, when they say private messaging, you know, your private message, right? Or you send me a direct message and it's a private message, right? That's not private. They're scanning, and they collect that data all the way through. All the photographs, all the links, they've got all of that data on you. That's another story that surfaced that, again, Facebook is sort of like, you know, nobody really knows what's going on. But, again, they're constantly apologizing for this stuff. But this is what happens when you engage with a free service like this. You don't do Facebook, do you? Are you on Facebook?
No, I don't actually have any social media.
You're the smart one.
No, it's just that I came from a organization where you didn't have social media, you know, and I've just never gotten involved in it. But it seems to me that how could you expect anything else? A company like Facebook does not become worth as many billions of dollars as it is worth.
Exactly.
Because they're giving you something for free.
Yeah, that's it.
They become worth what they're worth because they're selling something to people who want to buy it. And this, you know, this latest scandal that they're embroiled in with you know, the Trump campaign is just the latest one that they did. You know, Obama did the same thing. It's routine for campaign organizations. They use different companies in different ways, but it's routine for them to be able to collect information so that they can, you know, do very specific targeting of ads and stories and that sort of stuff to different constituencies.
Right. But that's got nothing to do with, Jim, that's got nothing to do with the Trump campaign, though. That has to do with
not at all.
Yeah, that's why I don't even use those words, because then people, because it just happens to be Cambridge Analytica. They did some work with them, but that, it's not connected to them otherwise, so
similar companies did similar things for the Obama campaign.
Yeah.
And if they're selling the data, we shouldn't be surprised that somebody buys it.
If they're selling the data, you're being pimped out. That's the bottom line. And this is a pimp business. And that's, and they're making their money. And you're right. If they're on the market, the stock market, making that kind of money, they build the houses and the lifestyle they got. Where do you think that money's coming from? I mean, and you're paying nothing for the service? I mean, use your brain, people. Where do you think the money's coming from? I'll tell you where it's coming from. It's your hide. It's your data. It's the stuff they're selling out there. But and I don't know. That's, it's kind of made the world a different kind of environment today,
We had a similar kind of thing where, you know, your data doesn't belong to you in their minds, right? If you freely provide it to them. We had a similar kind of thing going on, and it's a little bit fuzzy and it may be a little bit off topic, but for a little while, if you submitted your DNA to a medical community for some kind of medical research, they could actually copyright your DNA so that it no longer belonged to you.
Wow.
Now, I think there's been some change in that, but I haven't looked at it lately.
Wow.
But
interesting.
It would be nice if our DNA belonged to us.
Well, that would be nice. And then again, if you don't like your DNA, maybe you can buy somebody else's DNA, Jim. Probably not, but okay. Listen, a couple of other stories here I want to switch gears on just real quickly here. And, you know, there's a saying out there that the men are not doing a good job. And this is coming up a lot on my platform, actually, probably because we got a lot of strong, powerful women on the platform. But they're saying, you know, Malcolm, you guys are not doing a great job with running the world and running these countries. You know, the women are, we're different. Well, you're the psychologist. What the hell am I telling you, Jim? You already know this. The women are a different breed. And they're saying, we want our shot at it now. Well, listen to this here. Here's the story. The number of women running for seats in the U.S. House of Representatives is at a record pace right now. The Associated Press reports 309 women have filed to run. You know, I find that story most interesting. So I think the lesson I take away from this, Dr. Mitchell, is the women have had enough and they want to be in power. So what do you say to that?
I say welcome aboard.
You know,
I think the more minds you have in play, I view politics as an evolutionary process. You know, a little bit from this side, a little bit from that side, this push and pull, it's antagonistic. And then eventually it kind of evolves into whatever the current settings are. And I think you get more women involved, it can only help. You get more men involved. I think what we don't need is more men acting like women.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I like what you say. You always have, even no matter how, you know, egregious the story is, you always have a calm way about you that says, now listen, this is going to be okay. This is the way it is. And that's the way it should be. And we like these arguments. And, you know, it's good. It's good, Jim.
Well, our Constitution was put together so that a particular group could not get into power and easily ram things through.
That's right.
And so we should welcome slowness in getting new laws passed and the back and forth that occurs in our government and the fact that it's not easy, even if it's somebody that we support, like I support President Trump right now, to be able to get things through, because that really is, as trite as it sounds, democracy at work in the way that our founding fathers intended for it to work. They intended it to be more of a compromise than a fait accompli by one particular group. And so it's give and take, you know. What I don't like is that the Republicans at least the professional Republicans, are not that much different than the progressive Democrats. I would like to see opposing forces that are truly opposing coming to a compromise that is somewhere, in my view, right or center, that focuses on conservatism and more libertarian, more freedom for the individual and less rule by the government.
Well, that's why you and I could talk for days, because we're very similar in our coincidentally. But listen, in all fairness, I agree with you 1,000,000%. I mean, we're totally in agreement with what you just said. And that's what we do on America Out Loud, actually. We have voices of all kinds on there, Jim. I mean, it's all over the place. My whole objective here is to bring diverse voices to the table, diverse people with diverse opinions. I'm totally in that camp. I think the more you get different, but you know, we're not seeing that out there right now. The reason I focus and stop a minute to focus on this, Dr. Mitchell, is we're not seeing that a lot out there in the public space. There's this really negative. It's a real mean-spirited conversation. It's my way or the highway. It's to hell with you and hooray for me. And there's this attitude, like, if you're not of the same political belief, somehow you're the enemy. And I see, quite frankly, a lot of even my allies on the network and platform and other people, that's their message right away. Because we're sort of tainted that way now. It's things are brewing so fast, and it's coming down the pike so quickly that if you're not part of this, then you're part of the problem. And that's not going to get us all to the conversation, to the table of life, to have a conversation. So I think that's worth noting, and I think it's worth discussing with what you say, which I 100% endorse. I think the diversity of opinions and thoughts put us all in a better place, people. It can't be just one way. And you bring up another great point. That's not what our Constitution is supposed to be. It's not the founding of this thing, people. So let's all chill a little bit. That's all I'm telling you this afternoon. Let's chill a little bit here. That's all. And let's have a little more conversation instead of calling each other names and rolling down the window when you're out on the road or even on social media, which I always say now, social media is the new road rage, because you don't have to do it on the highway anymore. You just get on the social media and you turn your tweet out or your Facebook post out and you tell somebody to go to hell, or you chuck them a bird on social media now. It's the same thing you used to do on the road on the boulevard. Have a little more class, people. You don't need to do that in social media, really. You need to take the high road. Listen, one last thing before we pause here, I want to tell you, and this is kind of funny story here that so Hillary Clinton's on her world tour, talking about women again and women in politics and what have you. She's still on the world tour, and she's still telling people how she lost the election, of course. And I don't pay much attention to this at all, because it's old news, and I just don't really care about it. And she's not exactly in my fan club, or I'm not in hers either. So that's okay. That's all right. But again, she's another opinion out there. So she keeps telling people she was the perfect candidate, wasn't her fault, and so on and so forth, you know. Well, I've been noticing the last few days a lot of the media, they're complaining. They're bitching and complaining. They want to know why she won't go away. And these are all over. These reports, they're on CNN, they're on NBC, they're on Fox News. All the networks say, why won't this lady? What's going on? She keeps coming. Even the Democrats are scared, because they don't want her anymore to spearhead the Democratic Party. Of course, the Republicans are happy to keep her in play, because she's not really being taken quite too serious these days. But what I want to give my message to everybody out there and all of the media heads who are wondering why she won't go away, I want to tell you the secret to this right now. It's because you all won't let her go away. It's because you keep talking about her, and you make her relevant somehow, and you put her in your top story somehow, that she's out in India or Japan or talking. That's why she won't go away, people. Why don't you just stop talking about her and shut up, please? And we don't want to know where she is. We don't want to know what the book tour is. We don't want to know what city or country she's in. Stop it. It's old news. It's yesterday's news. More nozzle in just a minute.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
John Kelly comes out. He tells Scott Pruitt, the EPA director, that the scandals need to stop. So this is after Pruitt had a conversation with Trump. And, you know, Trump kind of plays both sides of it. He's the kind of let's make a deal kind of guy, you know. But Pruitt's been kind of stepping into it. He was reprimanded for some travel. There's been a few cats in the cabinet. You've been noticing, Dr. Mitchell, they have some travel problems. He was another one that was reprimanded for travel, spending money where he shouldn't be, so on and so forth. But there's another, a couple of other stories that have happened on his watch as well, this EPA director. And the other one is where he went to the White House to get a couple of people raises, a couple of his close associates that came from Oklahoma with him to the feds. He wanted them to, substantial raises now. They were very substantial. I mean, it was, they were up like from like around 100,000 to, like, if I remember off the top, 170 or something. I mean, it's a pretty substantial raise. And the White House said, no, you can't give the raises. Well, he went ahead and they found another way to do it, and he gave them the raises. And by using the Water Act of some sort, some sort of a public program he did, and he got them the raises that way, which really upset a lot of people. Well, now there's new revelations that he's being attacked for. He's renting some living space in Washington, D.C. Get a load of this. He's renting the space. This is for him now, from a pair of his high-powered lobbyists. Now, what could be wrong with that picture, Dr. Mitchell? You have any idea?
Yeah, the appearance of impropriety, even if he's not. Even if he can't be bought, what happens is he makes himself susceptible to being, having his character questioned because he's doing that.
Well, John Kelly, the chief of staff, he gets a hold of him, and he want, you know what, and I love this. I love this statement. So he gets a hold of me, and they're talking, and he says, he asked him, what are the shoes, if any, are going to drop? That's what he wants to know. What are the shoes? Because this guy seems to have a scandal now. Again, let's just say I think his days are numbered. Once your trust factor falls like this, then there's no confidence, and the confidence is going to drop. And then there's just simply no... Oh, that act, I just seen it, by the way. It was the Safe Drinking Water Act. That's where he stuck those people to get the raises. But, you know, the White House, you know, one thing I will say, Dr. Mitchell, about this president, Trump is very frugal. He's a very frugal, it's probably how he got, well, a lot of reasons why he got wealthy, but he's a very frugal guy. He has not hired as many people in a lot of these departments in the, you know, even the White House. It took time to get up. Very, very careful in how he has spent money there. That's kind of unusual. Even conservatives typically spend just as much as the liberals when it comes to big fat government, you know?
Absolutely. And that's because what they do is they want to build their fiefdoms. I don't think he's interested in building a fiefdom. You know, I don't think he's interested in burrowing in like some kind of a tick into the Washington Beltway status there. He's just not interested in that. So he doesn't really feel like he has to put his cronies in every single job that you could put someone in so that you occupy those spaces.
Yeah, that is very well. That's a good way to say that. Actually, no, I'm sure you're correct. I haven't seen anything to indicate to me that he has some long term plans to do anything else. I think this is a one shot deal for him. I think you get up there, you do what you got to do, and you get out. Which is really what our framers, that's what the founders wanted. That's what this country was supposed to be about. Not just for the presidency, but with Congress in other positions. And that's why we need term limits in Congress, I believe, to get rid of the corruption. It will help a great deal if these cats have to get out of there. And if they can't just burrow in, and again, problem is they don't leave there, Jim, so they leave with a wheelchair and an oxygen tank, you know? And this is a problem. This is a problem.
I agree that if you're the kind of congressperson who shows up for work without your pants, or you think that Guam is going to flip over if you put more sailors on it, then you probably ought to be looking for another form of work.
Probably, and we'll just keep harping on them to do. We need term limits, but the problem is they're not going to vote term limits in because they don't want term limits, and that really is the bigger problem there. But anyways, we'll see what happens with this Pruitt story, but that's going to go somewhere, I'm sure. The other story, real quickly, I want to touch on, because then I want to talk about Putin in just a moment and what's going on overseas here. But real quickly, I do want to just touch on this Rex Tillerson story very quickly here. Secretary of State, of course, that he was. supposedly not now, and I forget his ending date, but I know there was like a month for him to clear out of there. So he may still have some ties in there, but I know he's not creating policy or doing anything there. His idea was to radically reshape the State Department by making it leaner, cheaper, and modernized to the standards of a former private sector CEO. That's what's noted. That was his comments and talking points when he took this position. You might recall that. Well, now that he's been fired, this redesign initiative he launched faces a pretty big challenge. And one of the reasons is the legacy. About $12 million has been spent for private consultants. They're paying these consultants $300 an hour. I want to get a gig like this up there, by the way, Jim. If you've got any connections to help me get into the State Department to make $300 an hour, state made, you know. But they pay them $300 an hour. These are private consultants. You know, consultants. These are like two martini lunches. To give some advice, I can do that easy, Jim. I'm very talented at that. I know I can do a good job for that. I have a lot of advice, and I can have lunch and shoot the breeze with the best of them. So I think I'd be perfect for a one of these high powered consultant jobs. You have any connections up there or not? But anyways, that's what's happening with Tillerson.
It's a bit of a problem you don't mention my name.
Thank you, sir. I'll do that. I'll do that. But anyway, so we'll see what goes on. But the State Department, I got to tell you. The State Department, the Department of Justice, the FBI. I mean, we got some real dysfunction up there, Dr. Mitchell. You know that.
Well, I think the problem is that the hierarchy in the State Department and in some of these other, you know, they call it the deep state. Some people do colloquially refer to it as that. And that is that these hierarchies and fiefdoms get established. They don't move around that much. And a lot of the work becomes about protecting whatever fiefdom that particular political appointee has control over, particularly if it's a civilian employee or a government employee that doesn't move when the administration moves. And so it would probably be good for somebody to rethink the way that the State Department functions, but whether or not you're going to be able to do it in a way that is like a business or not seems strange to me, because you're dealing primarily with bureaucracy that doesn't create any wealth, right? I mean,
right.
It doesn't create anything.
No, they create debt. They create debt, not wealth.
Exactly. Yeah. They create debt. They view many of the things that are tremendous, like $12 million would be a rounding error in one of the department's budgets. So they don't view that as a lot of money. But if you look at it in terms of taxes that are paid by individual taxpayers, how many individual taxpayers have to put in $3,000 or $4,000 or $10,000 or $50,000 at
money.
The end of the year to make up that $12 million that they have no interest in saving?
That's right. That's right. Well, that's a big problem. And it's always been my beef with government is they don't spend it like it's their own. They spend it like it's somebody else's money because it is. Well, very interesting. Iran, Hassan Rouhani, Turkey, President Erdogan, and Russia, President Putin. Well, they met, and this was might have been a two martini lunch. I don't really know, but they were in Ankara, and they were meeting on forming a powerful new alliance, if you will. This just happened here now, last day or two here, and. Their idea is to create a lasting ceasefire in Syria. And, of course, the president has been speaking about Syria in recent days here, about pulling our troops out of there and what have you. And so these guys are looking to form the vacuum. But that's a very powerful trio there, Dr. Mitchell, is what I'm pointing out to you, is Iran, Turkey, and Russia. You don't want those cats having lunch together, not that we can stop it. But so they're looking at this alliance Putin is very strategic when it comes to the Middle East. If you look there on the map, in fact, I was looking at one of their maps earlier where he's got his alliances and all there, and it should scare a lot of people, actually. Any thoughts to that end about this meeting?
I do. But again, I may be the only person who is an ordinary American who's likely to think like this.
Uh-oh.
But, you know, Turkey is a member of NATO. And whether it's dangerous for Turkey to be part of that trio or not, I think really depends on the leadership in Turkey and what's going on in the intelligence communities. It'd be better if someone from NATO was sitting in having conversations with Iran and Russia about what's going to take place in Syria. And we wouldn't be up in arms if it was the UK doing it, or what, some other country that's part of NATO, Germany doing it. Mm-hmm. We become suspicious when Turkey does it, because most ordinary Americans don't trust Turkey.
And well, there's good reason for that, though. There's good reason.
Oh, no, I absolutely agree. There is a good reason for that, especially the movement that they've been making towards Salafist Islam and endorsement of the Muslim Brotherhood. I think that we should be highly suspicious of that. But it really, and this is why the State Department and the depth of knowledge in the State Department becomes so important for looking after the safety of folks like me and the other people that live in my community and other U.S. citizens. And that is that they should know whether they can trust Turkey or not. They should know. And so they should either be alarmed, or they should see that Turkey's part of that as a way for them to exercise some influence with that meeting. And I don't know which it is.
Yeah, no, we don't know. And we're not going to ever know some of it. But Turkey has been trying to play both sides of the coin on this thing. And no, you're right. It make a lot of people nervous. And, you know, when they had that coup out there recently where they, you know, had a lot of people were hoping that coup might have been even effective. I think, President Erdogan out there is not a fan right now. A lot of people are not a fan of his and the way he's played this thing out. Turkey is a very vibrant community too, having been through Istanbul, and it's a shame, because you say they're part of NATO, but I don't think they're always going to be. I wonder how long. Anyways, I question their membership in NATO, Jim, is what I really. I question how long that even go. I mean, they keep going down the road that they appear to be going on. I'm not sure they'll be in NATO before long.
I don't know. You know, it depends.
You see.
That's the point of the State Department.
Right.
And if we had more trust in our federal government, then it would be less concerning for us. But the fact is, we don't know, because they can't agree on a lunch menu, and they lie to us every chance that they get, whether or not they really are on top of what's going on. Because even if the president of Turkey is not necessarily a friend of NATO, you don't know what that says about the people underneath him who may well be friends of NATO. So I'm not saying that's true. I'm just saying we need more information, and we're unlikely to get it. And we have to have some faith that our State Department is smart enough to suss that out, even if they don't share it with
us. Well said. And, you know, we brought it back really right around 360 here when we talked about trust in government. And we touched on this earlier in conversations. I think it was pretty well a common theme on today's nozzle here is trust in government. And, it's a problem out there for a lot of people. And I think government's going to have to start to do some things right for people to get that trust back. And they're going to have to start following through on things, and that's going to be important. Well, listen, we're at the moment of the show here. We're looking for your prediction here. Dr. James Mitchell, what is your prediction here?
Well, I can't imagine that there's not going to be some other controversy that comes up. I'm hopeful, and this is not necessarily a prediction, that all this crap about this Russian collusion thing will finally just settle on the bottom, and like the sediment that it actually is, and we can get on with our ordinary lives. And what I would like to see happen is I would like to see some sort of left and right limits put on Mueller's investigation. You know, he should have a thing that he's investigating. And once that thing is investigated, they ought to shut that down. That thing should not be a 365-day lead-in to the next political campaign. It shouldn't be that way.
And we're actually coming close now, if we're not over the mark already, approaching about $100 million of taxpayer money. Some serious money there. They have a carte blanche, free access to time, money, and anything else they need out there. So, it's a real problem. Special counsel is a real problem. I hope so as well. But whether they close it down or not, I don't know. Friends, thank you for being here on Nozzle today here. My prediction is, again, here, we'll be back tomorrow. We have a special edition of Nozzle tomorrow looking at the sanctuary state business out there in California and some other really hot stories there. In the meantime, here, behave yourself. Nozzle off.